Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Lisa Alexander. Lisa Alexander is a graduate of the MFA in Poetry program at Drew University. Her work has appeared in journals such as Bloom, The Burnside Review, Girls with Glasses, The Palimpsest Review, and anthologized in Voices from the Attic. Her manuscript, which is entitled Throttle Body, is currently being submitted for publication. Lisa Alexander has been a sound engineer for Prosody for 4 years. Hi, Lisa, how are you?
I'm good, Jan.
I'm so excited to have you on the show. You've been behind the scenes for a while, and it's time to get you out in front of the mic.
So. Yeah, it's really cool being on this side.
Okay, so you're going to start with some poems from your new manuscript.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. A Night's Worth. Standing on the street in Gramercy, after a night's worth of walking across Brooklyn, of highball glasses smashed in the street, and kisses from the androgynous, super sexy punk in the bathroom of the bar where the floor lights up with beats, hard thumping, rib pumping bass that sucks your sweat beats. A night built for fleeing, and we did. Left the car curbside at the hydrant, but we were hungry, really hungry, and lost the keys when the Japanese woman yelled, "Don't touch my pussycat," and threw her broom, but missed. And we ran to catch a sunrise of train ride, returning us to the city. We teetered and reeked the whole way. 8 a.m. in Gramercy. The sun feels like the sun does after a night's worth of walking across Brooklyn. Amplified. Magnetic. The Plum Tree. If you've ever led a strand of children across a busy road to get them away from your dead grandmother, you'd know that one will always lag at the end of the line, stare at the ambulance behind you. Two of them will fight. The brothers will shove each other into the door of the KFC, creating a scene for the customers who all saw you coming, red-lit halos swirling behind your heads. You're not really old enough for this kind of charge. Not that you want to be. Your short arms are still reaching out the upstairs window for deep purple plums from the highest branches while she holds you tightly around the waist. Off that day. Like I'm supposed to say something about it. About how the last part of your body I ever saw was the back of your curly head walking out the front door on Eveline Street, and I was angry because you took the good product, the only product that would tame my hair even the slightest bit, and you died with it. That tube of rusk, likely kicked aside by paramedics when they stretched your body through that trailer and out into the fall sun. Your hair was likely perfect, chocolate sprung ringlets shaking as they racked the stretcher into the ambulance. You probably wouldn't have liked it, always so critical of your hair, just as you wouldn't have liked your viewing when I started smoking again, your dad lighting my first one back, the pastor talking about how much he loves Starbucks, the job you hated, all of us who loved you, crammed into the side room, rolling eyes over this preacher who never knew you, your face, in that coffin stretched as if you were repulsed by this. And your hair was off that day, frizzy, and you wouldn't have liked it. And I would have cut all mine off if it would have made a difference. But instead, I never used that product again. It wasn't until I put this manuscript together that I realized a lot of my poems were centered around specific places. Pittsburgh and Ohio and New York mostly, but this one is from Puerto Rico. Driving across Puerto Rico, Fajardo to Isabella. Up over the middle, old men playing cards, tiny table and rain, bottled soda, a downpour. Up over the green mountains, family party, cop car, cars parked in a yard, a young kid pushes through the crowd. You and I, after spotting chickens at the rest stop, I thought we could die in a mudslide or by tree crashing down on our car. We could slip off the cliff somehow, and I hoped we'd return to the States after huevos rancheros and a bag of weed we'd arranged, meeting the raver from Buffalo who now lived on a volcano. Best coffee ever had, We could have gone back to their house, but instead we drove on to Isabella and the best burrito eaten, to the Grateful Dead and surfers and surf so steep and slanted I wouldn't approach it for fear it would drag me away into the clear, unavoidable motion outward, the intense pull towards that entirely unknown, breathless excavation.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Lisa Alexander. She's reading from her manuscript, Throttle Body. That's such a cool name.
Thank you.
It really is.
Thanks.
Throttle Body. I want to ask you about the narrative in your manuscript. I really like how it feels like your poems sort of start in the middle almost. For example, I mean, the last poem, I think, started with up over the middle. One started with something like I'm supposed to say something about it. Mm. And I love that feeling of, oh, we're already in. We don't have to go in. We're already in. Mm. Can you talk about that aspect of your work?
I think that's just organically where it comes from for me. When I try to come up with a starting point, nothing happens. It shuts me down right away. So if I catch on to my little trains of thought, I get hooked somewhere in the middle, and then I just end up going from there and getting taken with them. And then I often try to second guess myself and want to go back and try to find what I feel like could be a proper beginning, but like that is the beginning, so yeah. Just go with that.
Now that's interesting. Also, it seems like there's almost narrative breaks in the poem where, you know, we start almost in the middle and then we leap to other places. And I never know where your poems are going, which I think is a great thing. They always go somewhere, yes. But I never know where we're going because of these leaps. And I like that you don't do all this, you know, explaining to say we're going from here to there to there. You know, how much of that is a deliberate part of your aesthetic? How much of that is planned, et cetera?
I think it generally just, it's how I perceive things. I find myself even doing that when I talk to people and expecting them to be in my head with me sometimes. And that's a problem often.
But it's good they're not in there.
Yeah, it's very good, actually. Yeah, it's really just, it's how I perceive things. And sometimes when I'm feeling stuck, when I'm writing, sometimes if I kind of try to force a leap, it helps me move a little bit more when I just let myself go with the leaping, mm-hmm. the association. I don't know. It just kind of builds on itself once I get it going.
Yeah, I mean, it's good that you trust your voice to that degree, to let that happen and let that stand and then find the poem, because it really seems to be working well.
Thank you. I hope.
Okay, can you read some more?
Sure. Night on Rattlesnake Hill. Shelter should be here. 3 miles in and still a slim footpath, dimmer and dimmer under the canopy. My awareness starts to sweat. Our only light, the size of my finger, when you stop at the marker that tells us we've been going the wrong way. The flatness of some states makes me nervous. Wide spans of too much information, too much space around my body, not like this state. The foresty steepness of Pennsylvania that curves possibility behind massive rocks. Potential mountain lions perch overhead. Bears spying me clumsily push my way through weeds with food on my back, listening to me talk loudly about orgasms and sex to distract myself from the thoughts that I, too, can quickly be eaten as it turns dark. 3 miles back, we're whipped by branches. I fall once, opening my knee, push on. Like middle of the night walking alone through a banged-up neighborhood followed by 3 drunk men hollering. We don't look back or too far ahead. We move on hope we haven't lost the path. Total darkness, the little light useless until we find a clearing, pitch the tent, huddle together. Your hot mouth, perfect darkness, naked for the first time, We can't see snakes around us, although days later we hear about the huge den just feet away from our tent. Made me wonder who was sleeping next to us. One flap of rip-stop nylon, separating us from a curled-up muscle of poison. Dinner party. Oh. Table for 12, and I am moved to remove my shoes, slip-slide my body down the front of my chair, knees reach the floor, and am I to bean with green almondine. No one seems to notice, so I duck my head below, crawl to the center of the table, caged in by feet and knees of people I know but have never seen this way. My eye to the Y of each crotch, tucked behind shifty skirts and suit pants. If Greg were here, this would be our spacecraft. The nuts and bolts are controls. We'd drive these loose legs right out the front window, above street lamps, and into the inky, dappled sky where it's cool, where we could actually breathe. But underneath, I hear banter muted. I can see who's touching who under the table. I know by the tapping of the toes who's ready to go. I stare at the house every time I drive by, after D.A. Powell. You'd want to go down Eveline Street with them, see who changed their mind, who has lines under their eyes, see who has the crazies at their feet, and listen to the songs we would get off on. Someone will be spinning. You'd want to drive by the stop sign that exists because the girls were struck there. Luckily, they lived. Not time for them to sit with our Joey, only dead a few months, our aching still abundant. He'd wear a tiara, strength of royalty, a setting in his curls, a protective shield. What was it that was so good? Catnip, pair of socks, queen alien, hand-rolled, back porch, 10-day eviction notice, job abandoned to drive nights singing into sunrise rush hour, smoking and laughing, faces out the window fluttering, stared at, car bouncing its tires through the steep streets, McArdle and Beechwood, Boggs and Monitor, getting schooled on motion, unveiled. People painted together, people painted shut, people embedded within each other, breathing through the bubbles. There were cracks when they dried. You chipped yourself to taste. Virgin Mary Blue. Couldn't drive far enough. The car getting smaller. Everyone was spilling out the doors. Everyone put a foot in. Aka baka soda kraka. Someone has to be. Out goes Y-O-U.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Lisa Alexander. She's reading some poems from her new manuscript, Throttle Body. Listening to you read those poems, I keep thinking about some kind of river, like a river of survival running beneath the poems. You know, the voice in the poems seems to be a voice that has been through a lot and has survived and is talking about it, you know, in very interesting ways. I'm wondering if that's how you see your poems, because it seems like there's often, you know, a sense of adventure, but then there's trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always some trouble, as will happen, and then often a lot of sadness. So I'm wondering if you feel that survival moving through your work.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting that you said it feels river-like. It does feel rivery to me as well.
As in the movement of it, or does it feel liquidy, or
a place to come and put my feet in? Really, is more like it. Mm-hmm. I get worked up and afraid of my poems a lot of the time, and when I go to them and get in the water, I guess you can say, mm-hmm. I feel better. You know, typically.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. I was thinking of the poet Natalie Diaz, who has a lot of river in her work, and who also literally goes to the river for inspiration. And there's a lot of natural world, too, in your poems. You talked about place and not realizing that place was a big sort of variable in your work until you looked at the poems. And I think some non-writers out there might say, how do you not know what you're writing about? So can you talk about that a little, how you came to know how important place was in your work?
Yeah, it was really the amount of poems that I had that were, you know, specifically streets. There were a lot of poems I had centered around specific streets around Pittsburgh and in Ohio and New York. But then in a grander sense, it was places, neighborhoods that I grew up in or spent time in, or, you know, places that I'd visited. So it was a surprise to me to see that being the anchor for so many of my poems, and that was what so many of them were growing up around. I hadn't planned that or tried for that. It was just something that had developed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how we carry a lot of place with us, and we don't even know how big it is and how it's driving us. So could you read some more poems?
Sure.
Okay.
All those years and they never locked the door. As though sleep had never happened. I'm up, holding breath tight in my mouth until the furnace kicks on. The flushing sound filling the house with refuge from the violent silence that exposes every possible ghost in my own night stalker movement. Standing pajamas over steps, looking down into the dark living room at the looming shapes of the brown chair, an ottoman lying like an open mouth, the piano upright against the wall, trying not to be seen, who knows what's going on in the kitchen, ticking and shushing all night long. I'm afraid to look. I'll creep into Mom and Dad's room. They know I'm coming. They've propped a jewelry box against the base of the door. I know to time my push with Dad's deep breaths and inch the door, just wide enough to grab the box. Move it unheard. Inch the door a little more. Squeeze my small body through without letting the beam of hall light cross their faces. I crawl across the carpet to lie in the kicked-off blanket at the bottom of the bed, to sleep a real sleep pressed against the scratchy floor fibers. Breath beneath their gray bed frame. The structure, a low warehouse for boot boxes, photographs, the dining room table leaf. My shadowed friends share their cove, watch me close my eyes and disappear into blurry darkness. The only thing to know about this next poem is that Yaya is the Greek word for grandmother. Anthony whipped a palm-sized plastic football at me, so I hit him across the face with a sloppy fist. Punching someone seemed like a good idea until almost impact. My fist slowed, didn't want to fly full force. He shoved me, two-handed, into barberry bushes, and quick to get up, I grabbed his face with my right hand, dug jagged nails in on his cheekbone, in next to his mouth, in above each eyebrow, in above his nose. Wincing, shouting, he smacked my arm down. Yaya stomped onto the porch, weakly shaking, hot dogs in hand, teeth clenched, yelling a mixture of angry, disappointed, tired, sick. Stamata, elado. We stopped, followed her into the house, knelt quietly on the matted carpet in front of the old Motorola. Yaya hovered over the sink, hard coughing and spitting into a paper towel. Anthony, wet-eyed and sweaty, five red half-moons on his face, chomped his hot dog, staring at Mikhail's navy, and I sat, paper plate untouched, digging rolls of his skin out from underneath bent nails. Would that give it shades after HD? Why not put the wet mulch between our hands? Why not the muddy creek bottom? Why not equate a parallel? Why not twist our one-sided weed into a spiral? Would that give it shades of blue-gray, curves of dark green, enclaves deep with red-brown ridges set too far in to finger? Would we find a fire or unstable dune or a warm pond, glassy still and late day darkened, to dip nakedly into, hidden, revealed only to lush greenness and the bark that bends.
It seems to me there's a lot of, not sure how to say this, there's a lot of relationship in your poems, but not as you might imagine. Relationship between shapes and sounds and perspective, size, and do you know what I'm talking about? Because there's a lot of half moons, there's a lot of distance from this to this. Mm. There's a lot of very precise comparison, which is not, I don't think, which is kind of unique in poems. So can you talk about that? Is that one of your obsessions? Or
I get obsessed with weird things, like weird, really tiny details and things, like parts of grates and corners of floor tiles, and I sit with those things in mind and want to use them in poems as tools, as ways to get at whatever it is I'm trying to write about, it if I know what I'm trying to write about at the time, but I try to use it to create something.
So do you mean the visual of it, or the shape of it, the patterns of it, or
usually the visual of it is a big, huge portion of it. And then that visual, I associate that with something, you know, depends on what it is. And whatever the attraction is, like I am very attracted to dirty grates, you know?
Like, I've never heard anyone say
eating ducks. I don't know. They're just the darkness and the fuzziness of them is just fascinating to me.
And the hiddenness of it. And because there's this magical stuff happening in your poems that this ordinary all of a sudden becomes something else. And I think that's a strength of your work. I don't know if that's what's happening in your head, but because no one else is in there, as you said, we don't know. But
it's never really been a tool. It's always been something I'd done, but it was never a tool until I started trying to use those things in poems.
I think that's very cool. I mean, that obsession and how it somehow translates into a leap to a poem. It's very cool.
Thank you.
Okay, can you read a few more?
Sure. Tiny rotating fan. This tiny silver fan blows its skinny clippers, reeling a whir right out the small crack in the window I lifted to make room for a little seepage. And I really must seep, even if only a little, to allow for my own evaporation over a never even amount of time. I could say something about needing the space, but really I wouldn't know a gradual release if I met one some rained on, dashed out, sicko Sunday. It's never until after I've left, the window cracked all night, the sheets gone to chill, and I've chattered a few bites into my pillow, that I'll realize there's been an escape. Red dot. Mark of birth on my head. Little railroad riding graffiti guy tagged me on my way out of my mother. Used to be a half-dollar wine mark crowning me under my hair. Mom points it out in a video we once made in case I ever went missing and someone had to identify my body. It's here, pointing down on the small crown above my forehead. Solid finger poke. Felt like she could touch my brain, that finger in the belly button, deep heebie-jeebie. It's possible I came out of her, red dot first, a searchlight. The color of the no-no, a warning. Crocus's baby means winter grit is crumbling. Gray icebergs chunk away from your head, shift off your chest so you stand taller and skip some. A school of fish swims hard left, then hard right, inside you. All point the same way at the same time, making you smile. Making you lean towards me as we stroll to the park. I pretend I don't see at first. Smirk, step off the path to walk the hill. But when we reach the garden at dusk, small lamps dotting the grass form a mirror of the night sky. I feel you stagger just a bit, see you grin slipping your arm around mine, and I wonder what kind of fish they are, how big their school is, how much room they use, to whirl about within you.
Just want to return for just a second to the rotating fan, the red dot, and how interesting that is. That I think that some people might write about the rotating fan and the red dot and never get anywhere interesting, and yet somehow you leap to some very poignant moments in those poems. And I'm not sure how you do it, but I guess that's the mystery of poetry.
Yeah.
But I love that movement from the very tangible, grounded physical reality to emotional relationship. Or there's a sadness in a lot of your poems too.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. There's definitely sadness. I try to. Nothing is off limits, you know, when I'm writing poems. If I'm trying to create a reflection of life as I know it, nothing is off limits.
Mm-hmm.
So there happens to be a whole lot of sadness too. So.
Yeah. And I think that's brave, because we've both seen writers who cut that sadness out or just won't go there. I think we have time for one or two more.
Okay. I would have been sent away. I try to see behind the swings through the trees by the power lines. I know I've been there with Mike and Nick smoking before Mike went to jail and Nick closed the garage and turned the car on. I have Mike's silver Swatch. Hasn't run since 91. And yeah, I pulled that shotgun from my bedroom window, unloaded. I probably wouldn't have if Julie hadn't suggested it. Tired of taking his threats about his guns, I wanted to scare him away from me. These days, I would have been sent away, made the news. At the station, they told me everyone knew Nick was a bad kid and I was a good kid, so they let me go. I told them the gun was a toy, and everyone believed it, except for my dad, who locked up his guns for the next 15 years. I haven't been behind the swings since, down the quad tracks that curve through small woods, past the playground where I won a stuffed bunny when my paper plate had a sticker on the bottom, and I was marked. Green pipe, you are not a squirrel. Standing gentle G stance on the wide lawn, you pop from the wet, cold dirt a curve. A kick top lip cracked, smashed, a cleft palate. A spidery string of web leaves your uvula. I could fist your face, tip my head into your hole, scrape my nose in your cracked green lips. Cricket in your throat, legs shaking in your cold vocal tube. Echo at dark, cricket in your guttural golf ball cup. If I crawled down into you, I'd call to myself through the pipeline, an old-fashioned wire, yelling letters spackled into one whole sound. My name, a dirt-smeared lighthouse mouth filled with barking, howling the open range with the ache of the lean forward.
The poetry of Lisa Alexander. Thanks so much, Lisa. That was great.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the arts entertainment news weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in at our new time, Saturday mornings at 6:30, for Prosody, 90.5 FM.